Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies, where we read and discuss foundational texts and key ideas that inform the way we think about organized work today. Talking About Organizations is a community resource supported by our listeners. To find out how and learn more about our program, visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group for Organizational Studies for their wonderful support. Now on with the show. Welcome to episode 81, a special episode featuring the keynote speech of the 37th Colloquium of the European Group for Organizational Studies, or EGOS. This was held at the Vrije Universiteit, VU, in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in July of 2021. The keynote speech was called The Value Drivers of Diversity, a Perspective from Research and Management Practice, and was presented by Dr. Miriam von Praag, President of the Executive Board at VU. Introducing Dr. von Praag is Dr. Svetlana Kapova, full professor of organizational behavior at the School of Business and Economics at VU, while Dr. Christine Moser, associate professor of organization science at VU, moderated the question and answer session. To learn more about the event, please go to our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com.
Do you know which university in the Netherlands has the highest number of papers published by female scholars? Well, according to the Leiden and TS rankings, it is the Vrije Universiteit, and we are extremely proud of this. And indeed, more than 40% of VU publications are written by women scientists at our university. One of such remarkable women who works at our university is Professor Miriam von Praag. And I am very pleased that she agreed to share her keynote address with us today. Miriam von Praag is president of the Vrije Universiteit Amsterdam and professor of entrepreneurship at School of Business and Economics. She is also professor of entrepreneurship at the Copenhagen Business School. Miriam's research focuses on economics of entrepreneurship, and she was a founding director of internationally well-known Amsterdam Center for Entrepreneurship. But next to that, she also studies personnel and economics topics and behavioral economics. Even as a president, she's extremely productive in her research, and many impressive papers were published recently, Academy of Management Journal, Org Science, and many others. But what I'm most impressed is that she really walks the talk. She studies diversity, she studies gender in entrepreneurship, and this is also the values of the Vrije Universiteit that she promotes. Next to her impactful work in science, she is also well known in the Netherlands on the corporate arena. Just recently, just a few days ago, she was listed as one of the most influential corporate women in the Netherlands. She is on supervisory boards of various large organizations such as Nederlandse Bank, Anne Frank Stiftung, Socioeconomic Council of the Dutch government, and many others. She is also a member of the Royal Dutch Society of Sciences. So in all that, she is really a great example and a role model for most of us. She bridges academia and practice that. Miriam, thank you so much for agreeing to contribute to opening EGOS with your keynote. We are looking forward to it.
Thank you, Svetlana, for this very, very flattering introduction. It's very much accentuated, of course. And I'm very honored and pleased to give the keynote lecture in your EGOS conference, which I have also seen earlier going on in Copenhagen Business School. And I'm really pleased that this conference is housed today and the coming days in our university. And my talk will be about the value drivers of diversity. And I will do so from the perspectives of both a researcher and a manager or a board member of this university. So I will switch a little bit between research results and also practical stuff. The agenda for my talk is threefold. First, I would like to discuss a little bit what is diversity And then I will dig into the value of diversity from an economics research perspective, from my own research, together with co-authors, of course. And the third part will be the diversity policy perspective. And I will give you some examples of what we are doing here at our university, and also why we are doing that, why we think that is so important. So, what is diversity? And I think the most simple definition of it is the within-group variance of characteristics. And oftentimes, here at the university, when someone comes to me and we are talking about recruiting and someone says, but at this team and for this team, we need someone who's really diverse. But diversity is not a characteristic of an individual, it's a characteristic of a group, of its distribution. So, that's first. And of course, diversity, that's also why it's so complex, can be defined along many dimensions. There are person-specific dimensions, like gender and age and sexual orientation, but also context-specific dimensions, like socio-economic background, cultural background, etc. And then, in organizations, that is also very important sometimes, there is this diversity in competencies in disciplinary background or professional background, and also in IQ. Some people are smarter than others. So, many of these dimensions are unobservable, and some are more observable. Some can be changed over time, some cannot be changed over time. Some are in fashion among policymakers, and some are not. So, we have quite a lot of them. And let me illustrate that by showing you two of our students. They are fake students, so don't worry about their privacy. One is Faria, she's a psychology student, and the other is Dylan, who's a law student in our university. And Faria, her parents come from Pakistan, and they moved to Amsterdam before she was born to a very affluent neighborhood, which is called Old South, outside. Her father is a dentist, and her mother is a lawyer. And Faria went to the highest level of high school straight away, qualifying for university, and that was supported where necessary by private lessons. She's a religious Muslim, and each summer she visits together with her parents, her family in Pakistan. Dylan, on the other hand, is born and raised in a Dutch family living in a poor area in Amsterdam. His father is a non-working disabled plumber, and his mother is a train driver. And Dylan went to various high schools, and moving up the ladder, step by step, to finally qualify for university, but not helped by private lessons. He did it on his own. And by the way, he's a top soccer player. He's homosexual, but not yet still hidden. And each summer, he stays in the Netherlands to visit festivals with his friends. So what I want to illustrate here, and I think it becomes quite clear, is that every person is actually a nexus of forces, and some are hindrances, and the others can support you very well. But we call this all those types of diversity, and all those characteristics that are spread in a diverse way across persons, we call this intersectionality. And I think it's always important, that's also what we say as managers in the university, to not only focus on the one most observable, most visible dimension of someone's character, but to look at the complexity and also what is hidden behind the observable. And that makes it also quite interesting, by the way. So, this was a little introduction into what is diversity, now the value of diversity. And I did some research into that, and actually, we did three related studies, which are field experiments, which measure the value of diversity within a business team. So, here you see the three studies that we did. They are a bit spread over time. But all of them are in the same environment, in the same context. So for all of them, we use the same method, a field experiment, and the context is as follows. We have a big, big opportunity here, by the way, because in each year, in a certain Amsterdam-based college outside of the university, in each year of the bachelor program in business studies, the first year has a program, a part-time program, which is mandatory, and students started their own business during that year. So it's a year-long program, and by the way, the program is worldwide and world-leading as a student program. And students are in teams of about 10 people, so there are like 500 students involved in each year. And there's a strong incentive also, because this is important, of course, in the study program, but they found real startups. So it's not a business plan competition or something. They found real startups. And we were allowed, as researchers, to form the teams in a couple of years. And we were interested in separating completely the effect of diversity on the performance of those business teams in terms of three dimensions of diversity: cultural diversity, gender diversity, and IQ. So why did we use field experiments? Well, I think if you measure the effect of diversity, you want to measure the causal impact. And in the real world, things are quite difficult because they are formed endogenously, and therefore your results will be biased. What you can also do, and what we have seen, you can do a lab experiment. But a lab, you cannot put people for a year in the lab, and so you will measure short-term effects there incidentally. And the consequences of diversity are mostly not so evident instantaneously. People build up relationships, they maybe get fights, etc., etc. So it's much more interesting to look at the long term. And therefore, we thought it's useful to study the causal impact of diversity on team performance in the long run by using this kind of field experiments. And I will discuss the results of only two of these studies. I will leave out IQ. You can read the study. You see the reference here. I start with gender. And what was the result that we found? Well, actually, we found, and I actually hope to find this as well, we found that mixed teams perform better, significantly better, than male-dominated teams in terms of the economics of the firm, so profit and sales. Significantly better. Mixed teams seemed also to perform better than female-dominated teams, but that difference was not significant. And that's not because females are better, but that was because we had fewer female-dominated teams. And in this study, we also measured everything by means of questionnaires, team characteristics, individual characteristics, etc., to dive into the question, why do we find differences if we find them like we do? And actually, the answer in this study was, we didn't know. We didn't know why mixed teams performed better than other teams. None of the drivers about which we had hypotheses that they might drive this result, we didn't find any effect. So that was the first study. And the second study that I discussed is about cultural diversity. So in each of the teams, we had a different percentage of people with a different cultural background than the work background. And what did we find? Well, actually, we found no systematic variation across teams where students with the Dutch background were the majority. So it didn't matter whether we had 60% Dutch students or 90% Dutch students. Performance was broadly the same. However, if there is a minority majority and true diversity, so people coming from all kinds of ethnicities, then the performance became better. That was an interesting result, and we also found evidence for one underlying mechanism, which is no in-group, out-group behavior. So when everybody is kind of different, and all people in the team are included to be productive. So that was what we found here. And basically, what can we conclude from this kind of studies? Diversity within teams matter. It matters for the performance of those teams. It matters along multiple dimensions. And of course, from these studies, we can only draw conclusions within this context. But there has also been some other studies. It does matter. And in our case, it turned out to be productive. Okay, so let's go to the third part of the agenda and dig into the diversity policy at VU, at our university. And I will combine that also a little bit with some research. First of all, why do we have diversity policy at our university? Well, as Karen von Oudenhove already said, it's part of our values and our history. That's an important reason. But also, we wish to not miss talent. And we wish to have broad academic qualities, and we want to achieve maximum impact for society, and society is diverse. So we want to have a diverse workforce and diverse students. Second, we also wish to make differences valuable, and that's also what we use our policies for. Because if we only have diverse student population and a diverse workforce living next to each other, then there is not so much inclusivity, and it doesn't, you don't get the value out of it. And different perspectives enable us to learn from each other and learn about each other. Another reason is we wish to control risks of conflicts, because groups with strong identity can clash. And we have strong groups with strong identities in this university, and sometimes they clash. And at large, in a polarized society, that happens. And we need to be sure to take care of them. And lastly, we also wish to do a lot of self-reflection. And we can reflect critically on ourselves when revisiting our own structures and our own policy through the eyes of other people with different perspectives. So that's also why we always emphasize diversity as being so important. Okay. So that's why we do it, and what then actually are we doing? Well, I can only give a couple of examples. We do so much. We have a diversity office, and which actually does many of those things and guides many of the things we're doing in the entire university. So first of all, we think role models are important as representatives of the university, and actually, I also did some research into role models. You can see the reference there. We think it's important, but also in our study, we thought it is important. And in our study, we have looked at in what circumstances role models are most valuable as examples of others to follow their path. Our study was with data from Denmark, and we studied entrepreneurial companies with personnel. And so those companies, those entrepreneurial companies, are still run by their founders. And we studied whether female employees in such companies were more likely to become business founders themselves when they worked in a company that was led by a female founder. And female entrepreneurs, also in Denmark, are in the minority. And what did we find? We found an immense effect. Female workers working for female entrepreneurs are much more likely to become entrepreneurs themselves than females working in the same kind of firms led by male entrepreneurs. And for males, which is not a minority group in the entrepreneurship context, we didn't find any such effect. And we also found that the effects are stronger in sectors that are more male-dominated, so in which females are even scarcer, are even more of a minority. And we also found that the effect was stronger for females who did not have any entrepreneurial examples in their families. And the effect was also stronger for females who were more similar to the female entrepreneurs they were working for. For instance, if both had children or both did not have children, the effect was stronger. And the same for when they had the same educational background or the same birthplace. So role models are more likely to have an effect for true minority groups, given the context, and where the role model is very similar to the person for whom the role model is there. So that is what we try to achieve also within our university with role models. Another example, we think an inclusive campus, I'm so sorry that you cannot visit our campus, and culture are important. So for instance, we have a center for diversity, debate, and dialogue, which is called 3D, and with, among others, courageous conversations about very sensitive issues where different groups within our community may have different and very strong opinions. And bringing them together and have a dialogue helps. And here we also discuss, for instance, burnout and stress among PhD students in Corona times even. Another thing which is important in our classroom is the mixed classroom teaching concept. We use it very much, and in this concept, within classroom interaction is very important, such that the various perspectives that students have, also based on their diversity, are given and are heard by the other. So students will learn from each other and also see how diverse people can be and can think. Third, but it's also important, is context. We have connections with identity groups within this community. We stay in touch with various identity groups, especially in difficult times or times that are important to them, like Ramadan or when there was an awful attack somewhere in the world. So, a third example. Our HRM policy, human resource management policy, is of course also important in achieving inclusiveness and diversity. And now we have an integral approach for sustainable change because we have a hugely diverse student population and we are proud of that and we think it's valuable. But this is not yet mirrored in our workforce. So in our recruitment policies and practices, we make sure that we have no implicit bias in the process, etc., etc. Also, at work, we make sure that our leaders, our managers, are trained and aware of inclusive leadership and inclusive atmosphere where everybody feels at home. And also, in our appreciation, annual reviews, etc., we make sure that our norms and the tenure tracks and the team that we compose take into account that there is diversity, and make sure that we expect value from our diversity. Next and last example, we also try to communicate in an inclusive way. On the left-hand side, you see how to portray a professor. How do we portray our university as a community and its community members? How do we make sure that everybody feels at home? And on the right-hand side, you see a statement that we made at the time of when Black Lives Matter was so important. Because when there are urgent matters in society that are close to the university or close to our core values, we do sometimes make a statement to support part of the members within our community. And we know that this is almost always difficult because there are also members within our community with opposite views. Recently, we were asked to sign a petition to boycott Israeli universities when the fight or war between Israelis and Palestinians was happening a couple of weeks ago. And we decided to make a statement that we do not sign such a petition. Not that we wanted to state any opinion on the Middle Eastern matter, which is very complex, that's not our task, but because we think that boycotting universities should not happen. In countries where there are difficulties, if anything, the academic institute should stay open, should be the place for dialogue within the their community, but also with others, with other countries. Open discussion and dialogues of important issues are also a responsibility of academia, we believe. And this kind of responsibility, as a consequence often of diversity and inclusivity, and based also on our academic knowledge, is what makes universities such an interesting place, I believe. So, actually, if you try to summarize the values behind our policies on inclusion and diversity, I think that in most cases, we try to be accessible, equal, equitable, and inclusive. But sometimes you have to emphasize one thing. For instance, accessibility, we need to take differences into account. We need to have inclusive toilets, and we need to be accessible for people who are disabled. Equality is very important to give people equal rights, like making sure that there are no gender pay gaps, for instance. But oftentimes, equity is the most important thing to give people equal opportunities. For instance, and Colin also said something about that already, we have many first-generation students who lack role models. And for these students, it's very important to have a program in place that replaces role models to compensate for the lack of their role models. And that's what we do. So we give people equal opportunities by using an extra program with parents, of course, for first-generation students. And finally, inclusivity. We think that we should give people space to develop their unique selves. They can do that even better when they are together with others who have other unique selves. And the good academic leaders within our university do not strive for all of their academic employees to become very well-published or well-cited professors. We try to emphasize the unicity of each person's talent, also their areas of expertise may be different, and we try to recognize and appreciate people along various lines, like research, teaching, true leadership, entrepreneurship, etc., etc. All those things contribute to a better university, and they are all valuable. So all these people don't have to contribute to each and every aspect of what we think is important, but they can do it partly. So finally, I would like to conclude by saying that I discussed diversity and its values, but only from an econ perspective and the why and what of our university policy regarding diversity and inclusivity. And I hope you take away from this that we do our best, and that is complex. But we can only be humble here, I think, because to make diversity flourish, we can almost never do enough to organize for an inclusive society, which is the theme of this conference. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Milan, for your inspiring and certainly thought-provoking keynote. Thank you. Now I would like to invite your Erosians who are working on the platform to join us with your questions, to put your questions in the live Q&A chat. You can find that on the bottom right corner of your screen in the AirPods device. And Miriam, hi, is our audience. They can vote up questions. So I will just start with a voted up question number one. And the question is, how can we convince people in the broader society, so beyond our university, beyond academia, and perhaps other societies, of the value of diversity and inclusivity, also based on the evidence that you just were talking about?
Wow. This is a very good question. That's really a very good question. And yeah, I think so convincing people who have different reality in their minds is always very difficult. And I think that showing good examples, showing that diversity and inclusivity is normal, and also showing that with such groups you achieve great results, I think that should be something, and at the same time, but that's not our task as a university, at the same time, I think people should also be educated that diversity is the norm.
Thank you very much. Diversity to be the norm. So I think the next question is a very good follow-up on that. So the question is, in addition to gender diversity, which is perhaps becoming a little bit more of a norm at the moment, which other types of diversity would you want to investigate in the higher education context?
So as a result from you, mean, right?
Yeah.
So we have investigated what I already said, right? Like ethnic diversity and gender diversity, and also IQ. And what I think is something which is more difficult to research is how people's educations, because they change also over time and their background and their experiences, how valuable it is to have diversity of those within your teams, within companies. And I'm sure that some people will write, oh, I did some research into that. I'm very interested in that. And I'm also interested in diversity in the age dimension, because I always think that older people can learn so much from younger people. Well, maybe also a little bit the other way around, that's what most people think, but I think it's the other way around. And I really like that we are here among so many young people always to learn from, but I also think that we can learn from people who are even younger than our students are. So I would like to see some studies in that area. So I hope someone writes and, oh, I did some research.
So please do, we will share later.
Yeah.
And, again, please vote on the questions you are really interested in, because they will pop up here on the screen. So the next question is a different one. It's, I think, about what you were talking about as well, what we yes, we do to foster and perhaps celebrate diversity. But it's a tricky one, I think. How do you in practice make sure that appraisal and promotion committees do not have bias?
It's difficult to make sure that this is not happening in practice, but I think we always make sure that the committee is diverse itself. And that's not always easy, because people who are from minorities, I know it from before, as a woman, I had to be on all the committees. So we make sure that the committee is diverse. And we also train people in being aware of implicit biases.
So building on that, there's a related question here. So this is more of a general, what can you do, what's the practical approach? But what would be the starting point if you would want to implement diversity in a university, in a managerial way? So where would you start?
Yeah, that's difficult, because that's a good question. It's a very good question, because I started enterprises, but my management practice is now in an organization that's 140 years old. I think I would start with examples, with role models, because this is so important. Also, as I said, there's committees that are diverse, etc. So I think you should try to hire people higher in the hierarchy of your organization who have a different background than the others. But then you're still far from where we are today.
Mm-hmm. So that's the future imaginary?
Yeah, and it's also not easy, because for instance, universities, it's much more likely that in the lower ranks you can hire people with other backgrounds than in the higher ranks. That's what has happened with women, what is now happening with people with different ethnic background. It takes a while.
So, and also again related to this, there's a question: how can we, as researchers and as educators, make the general media and public view diversity based on your definition instead of the simple one, people who are not white and perhaps old men?
Yeah, that's also a very good question. I think I don't have an answer. How can we? Yeah. Do you know?
Well, for me personally, it's great that you are doing the keynote speech. talking about role models.
Yeah, so I think it's difficult, but it's so obvious that everybody, I mean, it's so obvious that people, however they look like or whatever, they have the same opportunities, the same effort talent. So it's so obvious that if you throw away talent, if you don't look at the entire set of people who has those talents.
Very true, but then how do you deal with it if people simply ignore that? So where would you start in talking to these people? Because, you know, as educators, it's what we do, talk to students, and how would you start about telling people about the complexity and the richness of diversity?
Yeah, so I think, as we do within our university, we start telling students all the time, showing them that diverse perspectives are important, I think in this university, they will always see people with their first background, so it's a normal picture for them. But actually, I think that we should start much earlier in life. I think when people are 2 years old, they should already get introduced to diversity and to how important it is to not look at people's external appearance, but to try to look a bit deeper, to always do that, and the external appearance is not so important, and that you don't judge people on that. And I think that children who are 2 years old can already learn that. I have an anecdote, which is perhaps a bit shameful, but I'm sure it anyway. My children, I didn't live in Amsterdam, and when they were very young, they started crying when they saw a black person because they didn't know them. And I think, and they themselves as well now, they think it's horrible, and it is horrible. So they should have been educated even before, and we did it, of course, just after that, but they should have been educated even before this happens.
So it's sometimes simply a question of not knowing?
Yeah. I mean, if you see something that you're not used to, then you don't know how to react.
So, besides celebrating diversity, does it have a dark side?
It's complex, and we have had issues here also, but I wouldn't call it the dark side. It's reality, and I think there are much more dark sides on homogeneity.
Such as?
No inspiration, no creativity, no... Everybody is the same, you wouldn't reach far.
So your thesis is really that we should embrace the diversity with its dark side. So could you give an example of a dark side of the...
Yeah, well, an example I gave in my talk is about this petition that we should sign or not, and also the plans that when we have the rainbow flag and some other people within our university were really, really, really angry with us, and sometimes it gets really tough. And we also had issues here along other dimensions of the university. And when you have polarized people, it gets really tough sometimes because then you feel, oh my God, I can't do the right thing. And it's true, you can't do the right thing, but homogeneity, fighting at homogeneity is not the right thing.
Right. So you rather go for the kind of catch 22, maybe a little bit?
Yes.
And
yes.
Just doing what we did, always did, and just.
Yeah, and do it even more.
So here's another question about teaching, I think, which many of us really find important and also inspiring. So is it possible to give tips for teaching to very diversified groups, for example, teaching about ethics or business ethics? So the recipient is a very diverse group, how do you do that?
So then I think I should forward people who wish to know that to our programs that we have in the mixed classroom, and I think you can download it or you could make it available, because we have a list of things that you can do or should do or should not do, and I think the main thing is that you don't talk all the time as a teacher, but that you take as much as possible time for the students to talk and to make it clear. And I know it's even when you teach, well, I don't know when you teach mathematics, but even when you teach econ or something like that, it's possible. It's not only possible with politics or political science or something like that.
So I can imagine that it's difficult if you suddenly have to kind of get used to new ways, learn something new, or expose yourself. For example, if you are yourself from a minority group, it can be, I can imagine it can be very challenging to be so entrepreneurial, to teach in such a way, in a mixed classroom kind of way. What would be your tip for people who don't quite know how, if they're there, should they dare, how?
Yeah, so maybe we can open up our courses for the teachers for the next classroom, because for me it's a bit difficult. And yeah, it's not my profession at the moment to teach, but I think they should find it there. And it would be great if people are so interested that we can share this, I'm sure.
So there are many courses that people can take, and that can also help them to build some self-confidence in developing the
skills and teach in the next classroom, from the next classroom, in my perspective.
So, and then I think we have time for one more question. And I think it's an interesting one, because it very much connects to your talk. So how can we ensure that in building diverse committees, which you talked about just earlier, that we do not resort only to the visible diversity markers or characteristics such as gender, age, and race? So how do we actually find out about the hidden diversity and characteristics?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think the only way is to have an open, to be open to each other, and to organize groups within your bigger organization where people feel very safe with each other and get to know each other better. Well, that's what you hope in every environment, right? It makes much nicer. So when people know each other much better, then you will find out about the hidden aspects of diversity.
Thank you. Actually, this was a perfect ending, because we all here hope that we will get to know each other a little bit better during the next 2 days. I hope that our environment is conducive to that and will facilitate also social interaction, even among people who haven't met before. We have a lot of social events, which will be actually really, really cool, so please try and go there. But for now, thank you so much, Miriam, for this super inspiring talk. There's a lot of buzz, I think, going on, and we will make sure to open up the things to talk about to the community.
We thank the European Group for Organizational Studies and Dr. Miriam von Prague for allowing us to release this keynote speech on our program.
And that concludes the episode for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and found it valuable. If so, please consider subscribing through your favorite podcast service and you won't miss an episode. We also welcome your feedback, so if you liked or didn't like something, or have a correction or suggestion for us, please get in touch via Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Finally, we would like to thank some wonderful people for supporting the show. Sarah Otner, Leon Prieto, Hadi Shaheen, Marshall Reiner, Alice Barbosa, Thomas Roulet, Heiko Schmidt, Barton Friedland, Guldem Kara Mustafa, Roberto Bernardi, Marina Timmer, Bernard Hogan, Eddie Hunsinger, Fiona Knight, Peaks Craft, Timothy Paul, Willy Leidon-Wirte, Gabriel Van Bunnen, and Clara Lux. It's easy to support the show, and all you have to do is go to our website, where a donations button will greet you. Again, thank you for listening, and we hope to see you when we present another classic reading on organization theory or management science here on Talking About Organizations.